Usually when we talk about buying business software, there is this expectation that it's like buying a power tool.
Right.
Like you need a drill, right? So you go to the store, you buy the drill, and you use it to make holes. It's just this isolated tool for a very specific job.
Yeah, exactly. It's a localized fix. I mean, you apply the software to one specific problem, and the rest of the business just remains totally insulated from that change.
But then you step into the world of enterprise resource planning or ERP, and that power tool analogy just completely falls apart.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Because you aren't buying a drill, you are attempting a full body central nervous system transplant while the patient is literally still running a marathon.
That is a very stressful way to put it, but yeah, it's accurate.
And when you realize a botched transplant can kill a company overnight, it makes perfect sense why this market has officially exploded. I mean, as of today, June 25, 2026, it's at over $106 billion.
The sheer volume of that capital is staggering, honestly. But what's more revealing is where it's coming from. Because this isn't just massive Fortune 500 companies anymore. This growth is being driven aggressively by small and medium-sized enterprises. And they're fueling this like massive 80% shift toward cloud solutions right now.
Which brings us to our mission today for this deep dive. We're going under the hood to decode this 2026 cloud ERP landscape. We're going to look at the data, the architectural shifts, and the top six heavyweights. So Acumatica, NetSuite, Dynamics 365, SSP Business One, Odoo, and Sage Intacct.
Yeah.
We really want to understand the invisible infrastructure that dictates how modern global commerce actually functions for you.
Because, we aren't just looking at a checklist of software features today. We are looking at a fundamental paradigm shift.
Yeah, a massive one.
Right? We have moved from these rigid on-premises monolithic systems to composable AI-driven cloud-native networks. And understanding that shift, I mean, it's critical for anyone making operational decisions right now.
Okay, let's unpack this, especially if you are evaluating these tools for the first time. Like, what actually is an ERP?
Good place to start.
Practically speaking, it's the digital central nervous system we just mentioned. It connects your finances, your warehouse, your sales team, your HR. It basically eliminates those data silos so the left hand finally knows what the right hand is doing.
Exactly.
And picking the right one gives your business a massive competitive superpower. But picking the wrong one is a multi-million dollar disaster.
It is.
Yeah.
And to understand how to avoid that disaster, we really have to look at the plumbing first. Because the label cloud gets thrown around constantly, often just as a marketing trick.
Oh, all the time.
Right. But the underlying architecture dictates everything about a system's scalability, its security, and honestly, its long-term cost.
Right, because not all clouds are created equal. The data actually shows a massive operational difference between cloud hosted and cloud
Oh,
native.
yes.
So cloud hosted is often called lift and shift. This is where a company takes their old legacy on-premises software and they just drop it onto a virtual machine, like an AWS server.
Yeah, they've changed the hardware's location, but the software's DNA is identical to what it was in like 1999.
Right.
And that creates a massive bottleneck called version lock. Because that old architecture wasn't designed to handle seamless updates, companies become terrified to run software patches.
Because it'll break everything.
Exactly. They know updating the core system will likely break all their custom code, so they just sit on outdated, highly insecure software for years.
Wow.
And furthermore, scaling a lift and shift system requires vertical scaling, meaning if you need more computing power, you literally have to rent a bigger virtual machine to host that entire massive block of software.
That sounds expensive.
It is, and it leads to huge amounts of wasted idle server capacity during off-peak hours.
Which is incredibly inefficient.
Yeah.
But then you look at cloud native, and this is software built from the ground up specifically for the cloud economy, utilizing microservices and containerization.
Right.
And we should clarify what containerization actually does here. It basically wraps these individual microservices in their own isolated digital bubbles. So they bring all their own necessary code with them and can run anywhere without breaking the system next to them.
Yes. And because of this, cloud native uses horizontal scaling.
Okay.
That is the crucial difference. Say it's Black Friday and your order processing module is getting absolutely slammed. The system only spins up more power for that specific module rather than upgrading the entire server.
Oh, that's so much smarter.
It is. That modularity is the heart of what the industry calls MACH architecture.
Yeah.
MACH. It stands for microservices, API first, cloud native, and headless.
Let's break that down, because API first is really the unsung hero there, I think.
Go, absolutely.
Instead of the software being a closed proprietary box, it's designed from day one with open digital plugs. It assumes you're going to want to connect it to other tools.
Precisely. It allows you to, say, swap out your payment processor or your shipping vendor tomorrow without having to rip out the rest of your system. And then you have the H, which stands for headless. And that simply means decoupling the back-end database from the front-end user interface.
So you can completely redesign what the customer sees on their mobile app or, you know, what your sales team sees on their dashboard without having to rewire the core financial database sitting underneath it all.
Yeah, exactly. It creates incredible resilience. If a massive traffic spike crashes your front-end web portal, your back-end inventory tracking isn't taken down with it.
Right.
But to make this cloud-native magic affordable, these systems rely on multi-tenancy. This is how multiple different companies share the same underlying cloud infrastructure while keeping their data completely secure.
Think of single-tenant architecture like renting a standalone house. Like,
yeah,
you have absolute privacy, but you have to mow the lawn, fix the roof, and, you know, upgrade the security system yourself.
Yeah.
Multi-tenant is like living in a luxury high-rise condo. The perimeter security, the roof maintenance, the plumbing upgrades, that is all handled centrally by the building management for everyone. But you need a secure key card to ensure you only get into your own specific apartment.
That analogy hits the mark perfectly.
Yeah.
And in the data world, that key card takes a few different forms.
Okay.
You have the database per tenant model, which is highly secure but expensive because every condo still gets its own isolated plumbing.
Right. Makes sense.
Then you have the shared schema or pooled model. This is where everyone's data is technically in the same massive database, but the system uses row-level security.
Which means what exactly?
That means the code actively filters out any data your specific login isn't authorized to see before the page even loads. And what's fascinating here is how this multi-tenant architecture completely eliminates the dread of the annual software upgrade.
Oh, the annual upgrade. Just a historic nightmare of weekend downtime and broken integration.
Seriously. But it's essentially gone in a true multi-tenant environment. Because everyone is on the same infrastructure, the vendor manages the updates centrally. It replaces the disruptive annual upgrade with continuous invisible micro updates. It's exactly how the apps on your smartphone update seamlessly in the background while you sleep. You wake up and the system is just marginally better and more secure with zero downtime.
That's incredible. So if we understand that this composable cloud native architecture is the standard, how does that translate to the actual products dominating this $106 billion market?
Well, that's where it gets really specific.
Yeah, what's interesting is how the top six heavyweights have carved out incredibly specific niches. They aren't trying to be everything to everyone anymore. Let's look at the early pioneers, starting with Oracle NetSuite.
Yeah, so NetSuite essentially invented the cloud ERP category back in 1998.
Right.
Today, they are deeply entrenched as the tool for global financial consolidation, driven by their One World engine.
Okay.
If you are a multinational company operating in 14 different currencies, dealing with distinct regional tax laws and intercompany transactions, NetSuite consolidates all of that natively into a single ledger.
But, you know, that reach comes with a pretty traditional enterprise cost structure. You are looking at a hefty base fee, plus usually around $99 per user per month.
Yeah, it adds up.
It does. But the ROI justifies it if you actually transform your workflows. Like, right. Look at the BDO case study of a global food manufacturer from recent reports. They were paying for NetSuite, but they were treating it like a glorified digital calculator while still using a dozen disconnected side systems.
Oh, that happens all the time.
Yeah. Once they actually optimized the software to eliminate those silos and automated their material planning, that company saved $12 million annually.
Which proves the age-old rule. I mean, the software is only as good as the process you build around it.
Absolutely.
Now, contrast NetSuite's broad cloud approach with SAP Business One. SAP is the legacy giant for complex manufacturing and distribution.
Right, and their architectural philosophy is very different. They often utilize their SAP HANA database. And the reason ADA is such a big deal is that it's an in-memory database. Instead of fetching data from a traditional hard drive, it holds massive data sets directly in the system's short-term memory, or RAM.
Which is huge for speed.
Exactly. That is why complex supply chain analytics or material requirement planning processes in milliseconds rather than taking, you know, 20 minutes to load.
The trade-off for that raw processing depth is the upfront cost. SAP Business One often requires a steep perpetual license.
Yeah.
sometimes starting around $20,000 before you even factor in implementation. It's not as natively cloud-light as the newer competitors, but for a manufacturer dealing with thousands of moving parts on an assembly line, that depth is absolutely required.
Which is a totally different philosophy than what Microsoft is doing with Dynamics 365 Business Central.
Oh, completely.
Their entire value proposition is the ecosystem. I mean, if your company already runs your communication on Teams, your email on Outlook, and your servers on Azure, Dynamics 365 feels like you are just opening another tab in a system you already know.
And they are aggressively embedding their Copilot AI directly into that workflow. Take the recent data on a Morgan-based manufacturer who implemented Dynamics.
Right.
By utilizing that centralized Microsoft database, they gained real-time, cross-department visibility that dramatically sped up their financial closing cycles.
Because the AI can just step in.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. The AI can pull an invoice from an Outlook email and draft the corresponding entry in the ERP instantly.
Wow. And if Dynamics is about broad ecosystem integration, Sage Intacct is about pure surgical financial precision.
Yes, very focused.
They don't even bother trying to build heavy manufacturing or warehouse management modules. They are a finance-first specialist. Because they built an incredibly robust multidimensional general ledger, they command a massive 17% market share, specifically among fast-growing SaaS companies.
Right. If you are a CFO focused on complex revenue recognition schedules, subscription billing, and multi-entity accounting, Intacct is precision engineered for that specific role.
But the real architectural disruptions are happening with the younger platforms. Like, look at Acumatica.
Oh, yeah.
They are the true cloud-native darling for the mid-market right now, boasting an 89% user sentiment score. And what sets them apart isn't just the MACH architecture, it's how that architecture allows them to change the pricing model.
Right.
Because unlike NetSuite or Dynamics that charge per user, Acumatica uses consumption-based pricing.
This raises an important question about democratization of data. Consumption-based pricing lowers the barrier to entry because you can give system access to the warehouse worker, the delivery driver, and the CEO without buying them each a $100 monthly license. You only pay for the computing power you use.
But wait, let me push back on that, because variable software costs sound like a budgeting nightmare.
They can be.
Like, if you are a retail company and you have a massive, unexpected spike in transaction volume during the holiday season, doesn't your software bill just spontaneously explode? How do you budget for a utility bill that fluctuates with your sales?
Your concern is valid. It's the primary hurdle of consumption pricing. To avoid bill shock, it requires highly rigorous professional forecasting. You have to buy compute tiers in advance.
Okay, that makes sense.
However, the flexibility often outweighs the forecasting challenge. Take Mid-States Companies, a construction firm that experienced a 50% surge in revenue after a regional natural disaster.
Right.
They handled that surge flawlessly because Acumatica allowed them to instantly deploy the mobile app to dozens of temporary field staff at no extra licensing cost.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they paid for the extra transaction volume, but they didn't have to negotiate a new user license contract in the middle of a crisis.
That makes total sense when agility is the priority. And finally, rounding out the disruptors, we have Odoo, the open source rebel.
I love Odoo.
They're growing at an explosive rate, hitting 170,000 active customers and projecting 1 billion euros in revenue by 2027.
Their secret is their foundation. Odoo is built on Python and uses PostgreSQL for its database.
And we should explain why that matters for the end user. PostgreSQL is a highly advanced open source database that handles massive amounts of concurrent users without requiring expensive enterprise licensing fees.
Right.
And because it's built on Python, which is one of the most widely known programming languages in the world, almost any modern developer can easily write custom apps for it.
Yeah.
You don't need to hire a wildly expensive niche specialist to customize your system.
Exactly why it appeals so strongly to tech-savvy startups. They offer a free community edition and a deeply modular enterprise edition for around $25 to $30 a user.
That is cheap.
Very cheap. You start with the accounting module, and as you grow, you just snap in the inventory or CRM apps like Building Blocks.
So you listen to this, you analyze your business DNA, and you pick the perfect architecture. If you sign the contract, you might think the hard part is over.
Not even close.
Right.
Yeah.
But the data coming out right now is sobering. This is exactly where the nightmare begins for most organizations.
The implementation minefield. The statistics remain heavily skewed against the buyer. Current analyses show that 55 to 75% of cloud ERP migrations failed to achieve their initial objectives.
That's insane.
And 64% experienced severe budget overruns.
And the sheer scale of the capital at risk is huge. I mean, Microsoft Dynamics projects average $5.4 million and take 155 months, largely because there are massive global enterprise rollouts.
Sure.
While NetSuite and SAP average $2 to $3 million over 4 to 6 months, why is the failure rate so phenomenally high when the technology itself is better than ever?
The root cause is almost always a fundamental misunderstanding of the project's nature. Companies treat an ERP migration as a simple IT software installation.
And it's not.
It is not. It is a fundamental business transformation. Projects fail because leadership tries to force the new cloud-native system to perfectly mimic their old broken manual workflows.
Oh, I see.
They demand heavy custom code to make the new software act like the old software, which instantly destroys the ROI, breaks the upgrade path, and just creates a fragile mess.
Here's where it gets really interesting. The workflow issues aren't even the most critical threat. It's the cybersecurity paradox during the migration itself.
Yes.
Because we are moving to the cloud for better security, but the actual act of migrating is when a company is most vulnerable to a breach.
That is precisely what happens with the creation of shadow environments. To migrate millions of records, IT teams will spin up temporary test servers to stage the data.
Right. It's like making a duplicate key to your house to give to a contractor during a kitchen remodel.
Perfect analogy.
But when the remodel is done, you forget to ask for the key back, and you just leave it sitting under the front mat. Those staging servers get forgotten, they remain connected to the live main database, and they are left completely unsecured.
We also see massive lapses in identity access management, or IAM. Temporary admin privileges are handed out to third-party consultants to get the migration done quickly.
Let me guess, they never get revoked.
Exactly. Those elevated access rights are just left active indefinitely.
And because these modern systems use that MACH architecture we discussed, they rely heavily on APIs, those digital bridges talking to other software. Current reports show 60% of companies lack a comprehensive API security plan during migration.
That is terrifying.
They're leaving those endpoints wide open, practically inviting automated data extraction from malicious bots.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it changes how a company has to govern its IT infrastructure. You cannot just hand a cloud ERP migration to the traditional help desk.
No.
Organizations must establish a cloud center of excellence before they even purchase the software. Furthermore, security has to shift from manual gatekeeping, where a human manually reviews permission requests, to automated CI/CD pipeline guardrails.
And CI/CD stands for Continuous Integration and Continuous Deployment. Putting guardrails there means the security checks are literally coded into the deployment process itself.
Right.
The system automatically scans the code for exposed APIs or weak permissions before it ever goes live, removing human error from the equation.
Precisely. The deployment just won't run if the security parameters aren't met, ensuring a forgotten staging server doesn't expose the company's entire financial history.
Okay, let's fast forward. Let's say you analyzed your architecture, you picked the right system, you survived the implementation without customizing it to death, and you secured your APIs. You are live.
Congratulations.
Right. What does the day-to-day reality of running a cloud ERP look like right now in 2026, and where is the cutting edge taking us?
The immediate horizon is entirely defined by agentic AI and expanded corporate responsibility. We are rapidly moving beyond the first generation of AI that just analyzed historical data to build, you know, pretty predictive dashboards.
Yeah.
By 2028, experts project 80% of ERPs will feature generative AI as standard. But it's the shift to agentic AI that fundamentally changes the user experience.
So systems like Microsoft's Copilot or SAP's Joule aren't just acting as passive search engines anymore. They are acting as autonomous agents. Mm-hmm. We are seeing AI that can auto-populate complex journal entries, predict supply chain demand spikes based on reading global weather patterns, and even ingest incoming emails from vendors and automatically suggest cheaper alternatives in real time.
It is shifting the ERP from a digital filing cabinet into an active predictive engine. And that engine is now required to track much more than just dollars and cents.
Really? Like what?
Well, driven by strict international regulations like Europe's Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive, or CSRD, modern ERPs are natively tracking environmental, social, and governance metrics.
The ESG tracking is a massive operational shift. The system isn't just tracking the financial cost of your packaging anymore.
No, it's doing way more.
It is pulling data from utility bills and logistics tracking automatically to natively calculate your carbon footprint, the energy usage of the factory floor, and the exact weight of the plastic waste.
Yeah.
And it ties all of that data directly into global reporting standards like the GRI.
Because in the eyes of modern regulators, carbon debt is treated with the exact same scrutiny as financial debt.
Wow.
And to ensure the absolute integrity of all this ESG and supply chain data, we are seeing the integration of blockchain directly into the ERP.
Oh, that makes sense.
By using decentralized cryptographic ledgers, companies create tamper-proof supply chain tracking. You can't fake a sustainability report if every single step of the raw materials journey is immutably logged on a blockchain via your ERP.
So, what does this all mean for you listening right now? If you are trying to stay ahead of the curve, you need to realize that knowing how to balance a spreadsheet or run a pivot table is no longer enough to be competitive.
Not at all.
You need to know how to prompt, manage, and audit an autonomous AI that is balancing the spreadsheet for you.
That is exactly the takeaway. Yeah. The modern ERP doesn't just record what happened yesterday. It actively advises leadership on market expansions and identifies supply chain vulnerabilities for tomorrow.
Let's bring it all together. The 2026 ERP landscape is totally dominated by cloud-native composable architectures. You have phenomenal specialized options. Odoo's Python-based modularity for agile startups, NetSuite's one-world reach for multinationals, Acumatica's consumption pricing for the fluctuating mid-market, or SAP's in-memory processing for heavy manufacturing.
Right.
But the secret to success isn't finding the objectively best software. It is matching the software's architectural DNA to your actual operational reality.
Yeah.
It requires fierce discipline during implementation and treating migration security as a life-or-death business imperative.
Because a composable architecture gives you the agility to adapt, but it also gives you the rope to hang yourself if you don't govern it properly.
Whether you are a tech founder looking to scale, a manufacturing operation director trying to untangle your supply chain, or just someone preparing for a major strategic meeting, understanding this invisible software layer gives you an X-ray view into how global commerce actually breathes and functions today.
And as we look to the future of that commerce, I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over.
Okay.
If composable MACH architecture allows us to decouple everything and seamlessly plug and play hundreds of different microservices, and if agentic AI learns to manage those API connections automatically without human intervention,
right,
will the concept of buying a massive single brand ERP suite even exist in 10 years? Or will businesses simply have an AI orchestrator that rents individual microservices by the millisecond, building and rebuilding the company's entire software infrastructure on the fly every single day to meet the exact demands of that specific moment?
A central nervous system that evolves in real time. Just remember, no matter how smart that AI gets, you still can't leave your digital keys under the mat. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.